friends at Tivoli Brewing Company and the Department of Communication, Arts, and Sciences at MSU Denver, this is Unfiltered. And here are your hosts, Jay Schrader and Dr. Samuel Jay.
Vic, get your mic. All right, you gotta hold it here. Okay.
Yeah.
Get in here.
Cheers, John.
Thanks for having us. I'm very excited about this interview. Is it John Carruthers, I assume?
Yes.
Okay. So John allowed me to come in here late and do this interview. Sans Jay Schrader, but with Vic, cousin Vic. Hey.
So Jay, how's it going?
We gotta be in this wedding, right? Mm-hmm. We're obviously clearly very excited about being in the wedding. We planned a brewery interview.
Yeah, bringing a real funeral energy with you.
Exactly, right? So, John, address and kind of where are we?
We're in Revolution Brewing.
You can get a little closer. There you go. Get in there.
Revolution Brewing. Okay. We're the largest independently owned brewery in the state of Illinois. We have a 90,000 foot production facility you're sitting in and do about 85,000 barrels a year.
Okay. So was this the original location for Revolution, or was there...
No, so this is our production facility and tap room. We started as a brew pub about a mile and a half down the road in Logan Square. This neighborhood is technically Avondale, but our two locations are really close to each other. Okay. The other one is still there, original brew pub, the original system. But in 2012, the demand for the beer was so great that, you know, the people running Rev at the time pulled the trigger on this big production facility, and this is where we make 99% of everything we distribute.
So 2012, like, what's going on in Chicago at that time in terms of craft beer? Like, what are the names that people might know across the country?
There weren't a ton. The pub opened in 2010, and there was even, you know, fewer back then. But I mean, you're talking pre-ABI Goose Island. Rock Bottom was around.
Oh, shit, I didn't think about that. Yeah.
Half Acre was around, and they were, I think, still contracting. I don't know. Don't hold me to that. But they opened up their little location, the merch store now, by their tap room in Lincoln Square.
Okay. So, when did Goose Island get bought out?
2012.
Yes,
yeah.
Okay. So, in terms of production, how big is Revolution?
We do about 85,000 barrels a year.
Okay, so that's comparable to, can you throw some names out there for me?
Because I'm sure, so we're the 38th largest, around the size of like Allagash, Floyd's, regional breweries like that.
All right.
We distribute to 9 states, Illinois, Wisconsin, Indiana, Michigan, Ohio, New York, New Jersey, Massachusetts, and then Tennessee, but really only Nashville right now, and that's the most recent market we opened up.
Damn, all right. How long has the distribution been going on?
Well, since 2012, I don't know state by state. I can give you that information.
No, you're good.
But it pretty much since 2012, this facility was brought together with, you know, packaging in mind. We didn't have any canning or bottling capability over at the pub, so this was the next big play when Revolution was growing up.
How long have you been here?
I've been here for about 20 months.
Okay.
And my position's a new position, so.
What is your title?
Communications manager.
Oh shit, so you know everything about everything.
No, I think Twitter idiot's more of a, Twitter idiot's a better, reflective title.
Are you looking for a lot of Instagram filters to put on barrels and stuff like that?
Oh man, we don't do filters.
That's good, yeah.
We have Lightroom subscribers over here. We pay Adobe every month to make things look nice.
That's the one benefit of being a college professor, is I don't have to pay for Adobe, but I get everything updated like every week, so it's kind of nice, like, to have all those tools.
Yeah. That's a sweet life.
No, it is. I'm not editing this shit with, the fucking Audacity. I get the whole Adobe suite to make this thing sound good. Because sometimes it sounds like garbage. Not the content, but, you know, the brewery gets kind of loud sometimes.
Sometimes the content.
Oh, the content is mostly garbage all the time. So, well, knowing kind of your expertise, right, and knowing your career as a writer, and, you know, you had said you were a food writer and everything, are you cool just jumping in and talking about beer in Chicago?
Yeah, I mean, Chicago... A bit late to the beer game compared to, you know, the West Coast, a lot of the other places, but we now have the most breweries of any city. And that's pretty wild. Like, I don't know why it took us a little while to get kickstarted, but our Midwestern drinking instincts really kicked in, and now Chicago is like a destination beer city. It's really exciting. you know, from the big guys to like these new and still starting up breweries. I mean, there's just so much interesting, like amazing, thoughtful, experimental beer being produced. Yeah. You can't walk 25 feet without running into someone's tap room.
Yeah. How are the kind of old school beer drinkers accepting the new scenery? Is that part of the delay? I guess let me set up the question. I think in Colorado, as much as people bag on Coors has been rather supportive of craft beer, especially, you know, versus Anheuser-Busch. You know, mm-hmm. Coors tends to put out a lot of brewers and stuff like that. Was that support system in Colorado, or sorry, in Chicago, or was there some pushback?
Sure. So we've got the Siebel Institute of Technology here. I mean, it's one of the top brewing schools in the world. Our brewmaster went to Siebel. A lot of people did. You know, what was really interesting is if you look back at the history of Goose Island, just that was like the training ground for so many people where, you know, our chairman, Josh Deeth, came from there. Our brewmaster, Jim Seaback, came from Goose Island, where they met. You know, Matt Brindelson at Firestone Walker, John Laffler from Off Color. I mean, it is just this crazy alumni list. And I mean, I think it was there, you know, on the technical side with the brewing school. And once there was sort of the local craft beer scene to really train people up, then, you know, people making each other better. I mean, I think that's why it exploded.
Okay. Just knowing that you two are Cubs fans, and I'm assuming you go to Wrigley a time or two in the season. How's Wrigley's, as a stadium, the craft beer offering?
I will give them nothing but praise.
Really?
Since they took in Fifth City last year.
Okay. Oh, nice.
It was exciting to pay ballpark prices for the beer I get for free at work, you know, because I was like, hey, it's pretty
yeah.
neat.
Yeah, that's the one thing about Coors is their selection is fantastic at Coors Field.
I will say the Chicago White Sox are the undisputed local leader in bringing craft beer.
Really?
Yeah, they have long had like delicious, diverse offerings. I mean, you can find Hop Butcher for the world. Down there sometimes, and that is not the easiest can to find, even if you're just going to liquor stores.
Yeah, for sure.
We have a tap room down on the south side for the past 2 years, and it's been cool, you know, being part of baseball and everything.
Yeah.
But Wrigley's catching up, and you know, the way last year finished, you got to have something to drink.
Yeah,
that was rough.
I tell you, I can still find you one of like the three old style taps that's left.
Yeah, you know exactly where they are.
Oh, I know where the bleacher one is offhand, and I could probably find you the ones in the main concourse.
That's impressive. Okay,
yeah.
All right. So, explain. You just had mentioned multiple tap rooms. What are the laws in Illinois in terms of what a brewery can own? As many as you want.
You know, back when we first opened Revolution almost 10 years ago, it was a much different scene. You know, we had to file for an appeal because we weren't going to have a parking lot. You know, it's a street, you know, there's no parking. Our building goes to the property line. And at the time, you can really get a brewpub license for that because it's like, oh, it's a restaurant. You know, you should have some parking. And, you know, we're right by the CTA stop. We have bike racks in front and everything. But, like, at the time, it was just like, oh, no one had really thought that maybe this isn't as easy as it could be. Now, you know, you not only have tap rooms, you can bring in guest beverages. Like, we have a cider on. We have cans of kombucha.
You have a hard seltzer.
We do not have a hard seltzer.
All right. I just saw that.
Not really hard seltzer weather.
No, but what, who makes White Claw? They just did you see that story in Brewbound this morning? They just are investing another like $350 million in their production shit. So
that's good.
Yeah, no, it's not.
I mean, make hay before the Zima curse hits.
Exactly. God. Yeah. So, I guess your background, right? Tell us the story of you and how you got to here.
Sure, like all PR guys, I started as a journalist and turned to the dark side eventually.
Oh, so this is terrible then. So my interviewing skills are just garbage.
I was a print journalist. You don't want this face on your
face. Okay. Okay.
You know, as a journalist, I worked on community newspapers for a while. I worked in medical publishing for a while. I worked in finance for a while, and I actually loved working in finance and was not looking to get a new job, wasn't looking to change things up, and then Revolution created this new position, which is exactly what I do, and I'm like, oh man, like, I gotta take a shot, right? My wife is like, yes, go for it. She's a very lovely, supportive lady. So I applied, I was lucky enough to be offered the job, and every day here has been just like so much fun.
So awesome.
And amazing. Like, it's hard work, you know. We're not working with the team I had in finance, you know. Yeah. There's one person instead of like 25 people to do like certain things.
Was there a lot of flannel allowed at the finance job?
It was actually, it was surprisingly modern. All our designers had like tattoo sleeves and stuff. They did not care about that. So it was not a white, white collar look.
Hey everybody, just wanted to stop down real quick and invite you to follow us on the social medias. Jay and I are out there on Instagram and Facebook at unfiltered.craft. You can also find us on Twitter. We try to put a lot of funny content out there. Give us a follow. We'd really, really appreciate it and love it. Also, we just stocked up on some new hats and some new stickers and some new buttons actually. And if you head over to unfilteredcraft.com, you can take a look to see what we have. Can put in for an order and we'll get that stuff in the mail for you. So the hats, the guys at Branded Bills knocked it out of the park. They're really, really awesome. And it could be a perfect holiday gift for your craft beer drinker out there.
So you get the job, but where did you go to college? You didn't get that job?
I went to college at the University of Tennessee, and that's where I learned journalism. It's where I was an English major, so 4 years of what are you going to do with that?
Yeah.
And then I came back here after my first year in medical publishing. I went to graduate school here locally at DePaul University, go Blue Demons.
Okay.
And then, you know, so I have a very, a very writing heavy background, but I can social media, there's PR, there's so many things to do in a job like this, at a brewery like this, that it's really like, what do we have time for today, you know?
Well, as somebody who has a, this is not a brag, this is not a, even a humble brag, but a PhD in communications for my entire life, people are like, what do you do with that? Why? Well, I started a podcast, that's what I did, right? A PhD and all that student loan debt, I gotta start this thing.
Yeah, but honestly, communications has to be number two to English for the, what are you gonna do with that?
I think so. I think so, right? but there's something I think that you pointed out, the ability to write, or I guess in my case, my background's in rhetoric, the ability to understand how language persuades for PR, for social media, for everything is kind of invaluable. So if you're looking at, it's interesting to see some of the people who get jobs now in these places for organizations, massive organizations, and what their backgrounds are. And oftentimes it's just, it's that persuasive communication type stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I am not a smart man. I am not a good looking man, but writing can paper over a lot of things.
Yeah.
And, you know, I've got like, just at what was to me at the time, like a dream job when I applied for it. And, you know, learn to write, kids.
What was what was the beer that you fell in love with that changed everything? Like, what was, I would assume at University of Tennessee you're drinking some garbage beer. Or
oh gosh, yeah. There was this beer down there called Southpaw, which was like if Natural Light got kicked out of, you know, its house and was staying
and illegitimate
in the,
child,
was staying in the townhouses behind the Walmart. It was a rough beer for when I couldn't afford something classy like Miller Lite.
Okay. You can cuss on this podcast too, you're fine. If you wanted to use more, you don't have to.
I feel like you academic types where you're going to be like, oh, it's so much more effective without
without
cursing.
No, academic types, no.
So we drank a lot of shitty beer in college, Busch Light. I still drink Miller Lite, I will not apologize for that, High Life. But the first crack, and I never thought I would be like someone who's into beer, someone who would, you know, sit for the Cicerone test, someone who would like know the differences between everything, or who could pick out what he would want just from like the style description. And it just kind of like, it all started honestly with Guinness. Once I could open myself to drinking something that looked dark and like heavy, and it turns out it's light and delicious and wonderful, like I was kind of off and running.
Nice.
Yeah. But really, the early Half Acre beers, Overale and Gossamer, it's like adorable now, but when I moved into that neighborhood where Half Acre is in 2008 when they were just opening, I was like, oh man, there's a brewery like in my neighborhood. That is crazy.
That's awesome.
I'm going to support these guys even though I don't think I'm a big craft beer guy. I'm going to give everything a chance. And I used to go get growlers, and they didn't even have growlers back then. Like, they were new open. They had big mason jars, and they would just fill you a mason jar, heat seal it, and be like, yeah, drink that guy quick.
That's going to get sour quick.
Yeah, it's really like, it was shielded from the sun.
Exactly.
But it was Overale and Gossamer, and then later Daisy Cutter, that really got me open to drinking like local beer. I used to like make, you know, like Flemish Carbonat or like chili or something, and I would do a little one for you, one for me with the pot.
Yeah.
And that was a good way to like, you know, just learn while doing something else I liked. Then once Revolution opened, I mean, like Anti-Hero just took the entire city by storm. I was like, wow, I didn't know like pale ale could taste like, IPA could taste like this.
Yeah.
And a few years later, and still the beer that I drank the most here, Fist City or American Pale Ale, I just can't blow through that beer. It's so delicious and easy drinking. When I first started working here, I'm like, I bet I won't, like, I'm gonna be working at the brewery, I'm gonna get all this stuff, and try all this crazy new stuff, I bet I won't drink Fist City anymore. And now it's just like what I bring a case of home, like every paycheck.
I'm gonna have to have a Fist City before we leave.
It's kind of funny you say that because, you know, I feel like everyone has that, you ask that question all the time about what your favorite beer is that got you into it, and no one's like any of these new fancy beers or stouts, or they always go to beers like pale ales, like Fist City, you know, I'm Allagash White for me. So like
Allagash White, just those favorite beers.
Just those beers, like, and they're all, and they stand the test of time. You know, like the Sierra Nevada Pale Ale is another one.
It's like a great beer.
The beers that are still here, you know, they've been here for 10, 15, 20 years. Like, I bet you in 20 years, if you ask the same question to people, you'll get a very similar answer.
That's actually a really good way to segue to the question I was going to ask next, which is thoughts on New Belgium. What's the conversation on that happening?
I'm happy that the employee owners made their decision and got richly compensated for it. I mean, that's good. You know, you get set up in a Kieran 401k, you get made, you know, you get your years of hard work. I mean, it's something tactile and tangible. So I hope they keep making like the new, I hope they keep making all their beers that they're making now, because like their sour program, the Ranger suit, like they just make nice, interesting, like good, easy to drink, easy to find beer. And like, I'm sure Kieran knows enough to not really try to change that.
What's the business part of craft beer look like here that you see in terms of, I don't want to say buyouts, but yeah, I guess in Colorado, craft beer is a much bigger part of the conversation than it is in a lot of parts in the country. Mm-hmm. And I think we take that for granted as beer drinkers. The fact that New Belgium getting bought out is the front page of the Denver Post, like, that's fucking crazy, right? Like, but people, like, you know, it's huge. The week after Coors moves everything here, and beer in Colorado is big. Is craft beer and craft beer business something that really kind of holds the conversation?
I mean, it does locally, but I always wonder, as like both a Twitter guy and as like someone in the industry, how much people like us who are interested in this stuff like are in our own kind of little bubble where it's news to us and everyone else is like, eh. Yeah. And it's just like how jazz guys can name the drummer on every Charlie Parker album and you're like, you could be making these up and I have
no idea.
But, you know, I think people are generally aware, you know, that something big's happening. Whether casual drinkers make much of the distinction between, like, craft beer and corporate, conglomerate-owned craft, I'm not sure.
The more that I do these ads, the more I realize that I should probably have Jay take care of a few of them, but alas, he's a banker, and he has a lot of ass-kissing to do on a daily basis, which might make it difficult for him to record these things. With that said, I want to take a second here to give a thank you and a shout out to our title sponsor, Tivoli Brewing Company. If you haven't been into the tap house located right there on the Auraria Parkway, I suggest you make a trip. The beer is great. The food's fantastic. The guest taps are always awesome. I was in there not long ago. There were some Four Noses on. There was some beer from Seattle. Space Needle. I can't remember who makes it, but that was delicious. Anyhow, go in there, go to the tap room. But if you're not wanting to make the trip to downtown Denver, you don't want to deal with the traffic, for that I totally understand. Find Tivoli beer at your nearest liquor store, because it's everywhere now. You can't miss the cans. Awesome cans. We talked about Odd 13 having great cans. I think Tivoli's cans are badass as well. They have the look of the historic brewery. You can't really miss them. Go grab yourself a Helles. Go grab yourself a Cherry Pie. I think the Hello Darkness Stout should be available soon. It's a fantastic little winter beer made by the boys in the back. With that said, cheers to Nate, cheers to Charlie, to Chris, to Kyle, to Ethan, to everybody else who makes that thing happen. Tivoli Beer, go into the tap house, get you one over the bar, find it in stores, you can't miss it. Look for the big Tivoli Tower. Thank you, Tivoli, for putting your name behind this train wreck that is Unfiltered. And thank you to all of you for listening to the show. So with that said, enjoy the rest of the interview and go grab a Tivoli.
Does craft beer have, is craft beer able to grab more of that percentage of beer drinker, you think, as the years move forward? Are we moving more towards the craft, or is it kind of go more towards, I guess, the White Claw and the hard seltzer?
Well, I mean, people give ABI a lot of guff, but like every indication, you know, from you know, the way they acquire, the way that they market, the way that they take a lot of these brands national, you know, indicates that that's what they think. And I mean, that's the number one beer company in the world, thinking that Americans will continue to have, you know, a continued appetite and passion for craft.
Yeah.
And here we see that a lot here in Chicago, like super local, super fresh. People who won't drink an IPA after like 2 weeks on, you know, and we'll just be like, it's stored cold, but it's like 3.5 weeks old. And I'm like, oh, God, we just ruin ourselves here, you know?
Oh, my God. That's about imagine. Yes. Jesus. We were at an Odd 13 the other night, and they canned us like their new triple IPA that isn't even out yet. And they canned some cans for Jay and I. It's just like you get spoiled. You get so spoiled.
Like you're like, man, that's what's so cool about beer. You know, it's so ephemeral. It's a time and a place and a point that isn't to be replicated. And like, you can't keep it. You can't save it. You just taste a beer like that, and you're like, man, beer does not taste like that for very long. It's such a cool thing. I still am like, wow.
It's gonna be nice to party with you this weekend because we get to not drink much Miller Lite. Split our sixer of, you know, whatever. You know.
Here, let me step away for a second.
Yeah, go for it. Mm-hmm. All right. So, I guess you as a beer consumer.
Yeah.
What have you seen change living here your whole life in terms of craft beer?
I feel like the people that drink, you know, the Miller Lites and the MGDs and the Bud Lights like 4 or 5 years ago, they're like so dismissive.
Yeah.
They were like, I don't want to. What is that craft beer stuff, you know? Mm-hmm. It's kind of like what a craft beer person now is like, oh, what's that seltzer?
Yeah.
You know, that attitude. But a couple, you know, in the last year or two, they've started to drink like things like Fifth City and pale ales and stuff, you know? Because they understand it's just a better tasting beer, you know? But it's not super complex like, you know, a stout or IPAs, but it's just almost a better version of, you know, their beer they're used to drinking.
What is the easy leap for a macro beer drinker to a craft beer? Is it an IPA? Is it an APA? Is it what have you seen? I guess, I mean, you just said it was Allagash wheat. The people who come in here that you have to talk to, right?
It just depends. Some people don't know themselves, but some people do like a stout. They like some little roastiness, a little residual sweetness. Sometimes they do just like a, you know, like a craft pilsner or an APA. The thing that we've found lately with our Freedom of Speech and like Freedom Sour series is that like those easier kettle sours are a huge door opener for someone who's like a wine fan or somebody who wants like a low calorie kind of beverage, something light and refreshing. It really just depends on the person. We pour a lot of little samples and have that "what do you like" conversation. Our bartenders are fantastic about that.
Do they get trained in that, or are they just kind of? You hire people who know it already.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they get trained, but I think a lot of times, like, they're just very good people at, like, reading, you know, a customer and kind of figuring out, well, what are they giving me? You know, what can I kind of deduce might work for them? It also helps that we have 20 beers on tap, so, like, if I choose a random four, you're likely to find something cool.
It's pretty impressive, by the way. What do you see in terms of trends? In the beer drinker here in Middle America, is anything surprising you, or what are you seeing kind of take off now?
I mean,
that's not seasonal, I guess.
I don't know if this is everywhere in the Midwest, but you know, people are still mad for, you know, barrel age and hazy, like, you know, the two very big recent trends. But honestly, you know, that Freedom of Speech, we made that sour series into a year round. I think it started as a seasonal, and it kind of shot up the chart. I mean, it's one of the top 10 sour beers nationally, and again, we're only in 9 states.
Yeah,
people like that. Whether it's like the low calorie, whether it's kind of the fruit forward, or there's that like kind of sweet sweetness with a little tart punch at the end. People dig that. But yeah, I mean, we've been trying a lot of new stuff with hazies. We have 10 beers in our barrel aged program that runs from November. October to January, sorry. And then we released barley wine in July because people just cannot get enough barley wine.
Tell me about this barrel program. Has it always been here, or is it this a new thing? I mean, I'll take some pictures and make sure we put them on the socials, but that's fucking nuts.
Sure. So, you know, at the pub, there was never really time or space to do barrel stuff. Like, we could have a barrel there, but it'd be like a barrel. So, you know, part of the reason that, you know, they wanted to move over here was not just a bottle and can, but to also like start a barrel program in earnest. And I mean, that's something with years of lead time. You know, you're finding different supply chains for barrels, you're finding out what beers work, which beers don't, you are aging them, you're looking 2, 3, and 4 years down the road to, all right, we have this, we're going to put this in the tanks, you know, we're going to put all this here. You know, all these barrels are meticulously numbered, they have their own characteristics. There's so much spreadsheet work in brewing that, like, I guess casual fans will never know about, but my God, I see spreadsheets in my sleep. I don't even brew.
God, I was looking at brewers at Tivoli yesterday, look at their sales numbers, and it was just mind-boggling, because one of them's like an MS in math, so we can like visualize all of this stuff. It's just fucking nuts, like how they make decisions. Oh, we gotta brew this today.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, but yeah, we have a barrel program lead, his name is Marty Scott.
Okay.
He's a great Twitter follow, @RevBarrels.
@RevBarrels, okay.
But he really makes the barrel program into like the thing it is today. I mean, we just released a 2-year-old rye wine, which like a bit of an obscure style, right? But it was called VSOR, very special old rye way. We put VSO on things that are aged like, you know, 2+ years.
Okay.
And we had X amount, you know, because you can only make so much 2-year-old beer. There's just only so much space. And we thought, well, okay, people have lined up for this release. If everyone in line gets the 2 4-packs they can get, we'll sell out between 6:30 and 7:30. And that beer was gone at 6:34 p.m. It was wild. Like people, Marty has this amazing knack for, you know, making beers and taking, you know, pulling the complexities out of different barrels from different producers, blending that all into these really compelling, cool beers that are still very balanced, you know. I think we've all had that barrel-aged stout that is just like cake batter that just don't want to drink, you know, more than 2 ounces of.
Yeah.
But Marty turns out these really cool, compelling beers that, I mean, even as breweries open down the street like all the time, people still come here because they want these like Rev barrel-aged beers because it's something unique. It's not something you can just, you know, you can't just throw something into a barrel and have it go. Like the complexity that like Jim Seaback and Marty and Glenn Allen, our brewery manager, manage for this program is just wild.
That's pretty cool. Are you doing any experimentations? Like, you know, just as we walk this back, where is the experimentation happening?
I'm glad you asked that. Because, so, you know, some of these barrels, you're going to get them in all sorts of conditions. We have a very good supplier, but occasionally you get barrels that leak. They drip, and you can't have that because leaky beer leaking on the floor, that's something that fruit flies will get to. It'll spread infection. It's not great. So what Marty does is when he finds a leaky barrel, he'll order a new fresh barrel, and he'll put the remainder of the leaking barrel into there before we destroy the old barrel. So that won't fill up the headspace. So what he does is he combines some of these barrels into new blends, you know, kind of alike barrels. So these are all double barreled. They're all completely unique blends, never to be replicated. We call it the Sanctuary Program. He titles each one of them, gives it a name, talks about the unique contents, and then we put it on draft at our releases, you know, and those are all single barrel beers.
Yeah.
You come, you have it, and it's never going to be on again, you know? We couldn't make it again exactly like that if we tried. It's amazing.
Yeah.
So it's kind of cool, and it's kind of refreshing in that, like, you know, barrel-aged beer is a very, like, you know, collect and save and trade thing. This is another thing, like I was talking about with that super fresh beer off the line, where it's like, you can have the experience right now, you can have this moment, and then it's gone, and you just...
Crack it. We can do a cheers, by the way.
Cheers.
Get in there. What do you have to do this afternoon? You got a wedding to go plan, or what is
it? No, we have a fundraiser here called We Are Family. So this is our second annual Pride fundraiser. What we do with it is there's a local social service nonprofit called Chicago House and Social Service Agency. Excuse me. No cough button.
You're good.
What they do is they provide social services like job support, supportive housing, tenancy, healthcare counseling to people with HIV and AIDS who are chronically homeless or marginalized or wouldn't be able to get this kind of care elsewhere.
Okay.
So what we do is, you know, last year we had a special beer on tap. It was the first year of the event. This year we've actually canned a beer called Freedom of Expression. It's another kettle sour with strawberry and rhubarb.
Okay.
And tonight all the draft pours of that and all the 4-packs of it are going to go directly to Chicago House. We also have a silent auction with some really cool stuff. We got like a Girl on the Go chef's table. We're auctioning off a private tour with Marty and all the beers from this year's Deepwood series in like one big package.
Oh, shit.
So, you know, silent auction, we've got some music. It's just one big fundraiser for like a local organization that's really, really deserving that we're happy to work with.
Does this space get used a lot for those kind of big events? I mean, is this?
Yeah, and we also do weddings here. And we do weddings over at the brew pub in the second floor. You know, between, I mean, this time of year with the, you know, a one barrel age release a month, it's a pretty busy time here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got a question?
Yeah, on the barrel age series, so I feel like a couple years ago, you guys did something that really changed by putting them in 12-ounce cans.
Mm-hmm.
Can you walk us through maybe kind of the thought process for that? Because before that, a lot of people were like, they need to be in bombers,
mm-hmm.
right? Like everyone was like, barrel-aged beers are in bombers. And then I feel like you guys were one of the first to do it in cans. And I've seen a couple other breweries do it recently, and it seems like it's really appreciated by the consumer.
Yeah. You know, part of that, of course, it's great to like be able to open one yourself and share it with someone, or even kind of take it down yourself and not have to worry about 22 ounces of beer that you can't reseal. We actually did have bombers when we opened here. There was a bottling line right here, and we were, you know, putting everything in cans and putting some things in bombers. And then after a couple of years, they invested in this new KHS filler you see right behind you. That is a German-engineered, absolute top-of-the-line machine. It gets us the lowest total package oxygen, like super low numbers that we could have never realized before. But for a while, it was, you know, like Anti-Hero, Fist City, Sun Crusher, all in cans, but then we were still using this, you know, fairly entry-level bottle filler to fill bombers for like the most special, expensive, like crazy beers that we make. And we thought, well, wait, like, why don't we package those, you know, with the same care and the same, you know, oxygen numbers as, you know, every other beer that comes out of rep.
Yeah.
You know, but it, like you're saying, at the time, it wasn't something a lot of people were doing. So, you know, there was, I'm sure, some trepidation. But like right from the start, people loved it. They loved the format. They loved being able to, like, one of the fun things to do is just our barrel-aged beers come in four packs. You buy the four pack, you drink one right away, and then you can wait 3 months and then wait 3 months and then wait, and, you know, and see how it opens up and develops. And then by the time it happens, we're releasing that beer again.
How old is this canning device?
The canning line?
Yeah, the canning line.
I believe it came in with the expansion in 2015 where we added the big fermenter tanks to the back of the building and increased our capacity.
What was here before? Was it just open space?
There was a different canning canning line, and then there was a bottle filler kind of right here.
That's impressive. You don't see that very often in that.
Yeah, this wall wasn't even here. You would literally just come into the tap, and there was just a chain link fence here separating the brewery from the. But it turns out people like air conditioning, so
it's overrated. before we wrap up, because I didn't even ask this question, you're the communications guy. What is the Revolution brand? Like, if you could do a pitch in 30 seconds to a minute.
I mean, it's whatever the Revolution means to you. You know, at the heart, it's making great beer accessible for everybody. Okay. It's about, you know, having another place to go outside the home that's welcoming and inviting and non-judgmental and, you know, just a fun, positive place. But really, I think the best answer is, like, Revolution is the people who work here. I know you're only getting to talk to me right now, but, you know, every person who works here, you know, has an amazing, unique story. And they all contribute to, like, working at a place we're all very proud to be employed by. I realize that's a very company man answer, but you know, sometimes I feel cheesy about this place.
No, I was thinking too, the visuals, right? I mean, is the comic book thing always part of it? Is it, or is that a new spinoff? Is that always there?
Oh,
because there's some stuff. Yeah, even upstairs, yeah. Right? There's that.
We do a series of beers called the Hero Series, where we will create a new beer to feature like one kind of hop. It's not a single hop beer, but it's built to feature. Say Cashmere, you know, Cashmere Hero, Galaxy Hero,
Is that a smash beer? Yeah. Is that what they're called? Where like they just single malt, single hop.
Yeah, right? It's not that. They write our brewers write and execute a new recipe for everything because some hops work better with different malt profiles, different, you know, water treatments and all that. But yes, the visual look, we've had the same designer, Ian, pretty much since the beginning. A very distinctive, bold, graphic treatment. And, yeah, it's it's worked well for us. We're all, you know, at heart, like, comic book and sci-fi nerds.
No, totally understand. A lot of brewers are. I get it.
I've never met a brewery that didn't have a heavy metal poster in it either.
Oh, shit. I see a lot of Grateful Dead posters, too. The ones that I go to, right? There's this mix of death metal and a lot of just marijuana smoking, usually. So, it happens.
Yeah, I don't think a lot of breweries test for that.
Exactly. You can't.
Not ones with a whole workforce.
Yeah, there's no way. So, knowing that you and I have to go do wedding stuff, do you have any questions?
Yeah, probably. I guess maybe just, you know, in a minute or two, kind of where do you see, like, the next 2 to 3 years of Revolution going?
Yeah, it's hard to tell. Times are getting tougher out there for craft brewers, you know, as everyone knows. But, you know, we're going to hit that 10-year mark. And, I mean, that's just wild because it seemed like yesterday that Revolution, I mean, even before I was opening, I was like, oh, yeah, that's that new soon-to-be-open brew pub. It's really hard to predict the future, but we've really tried to build this thing to, you know, sustain. I think you'll continue seeing more hazy beers from us. We just introduced a year-round hazy. The barrel program is only getting better. It's infuriating every time you praise one of the beers to Marty. He's like, hey, yeah, that's pretty good, but wait till next year, because those beers are already in the barrels and they're something amazing. So, you know, I think that's what it is for the next couple of years. Just like, wait till next year. It's good now and it's going to get great.
Answer.
Yeah.
I'm excited.
Okay. All right. Well, John, cheers. Thank you so much.
Yeah, cheers, guys. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks for this wonderfully fresh beer. Good Lord. It's a good beer. All right. Yeah. Cheers, gents. Thanks, buddy. That was good.
Yeah.